Ephesians chapter 2. So if everyone will stand in honor of the Holy Scriptures. I will read 11 through 16, and I will put the emphasis in what it should be. Wherefore, remember that you being in time past nations in the flesh, who are called the house of Israel by that which is called the house of Judah. But at that time you were apart from Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. But now in Christ Jesus, you who at one time were far off are made near by the blood of Christ. For he is our peace, who has made both one, and has broken down the middle wall partition between us, having abolished in his flesh the enmity, even the law of commandments contained in animal sacrifice ordinances and tabernacle and temple ordinances, for to make himself of two one new man, so making peace. And that he might reconcile both the house of Israel and the house of Judah unto God in one body, which is the church, by the cross, having slain the enmity, the law of ordinances of tabernacle, temple, and animal sacrifices, thereby. You may be seated. This sermon is one in which we get to that middle of the sermon. It's things that I never knew of before. So I hope you enjoy it. The title is Thorns in Your Sides. It's part four. And I could subtitle it, It's Not Jews and Gentiles. Ephesians 2 is a chapter that seems to be a great mystery to almost every preacher in the country. They consistently miss that the two entities talked about in this chapter are not Jews and Gentiles, but the house of Judah and the house of Israel, respectively. That is the us. The Old Testament informs us that the house of Israel, after separating from the house of Judah, became a people who got farther and farther away from keeping God's laws, that they became outright Baal worshipers. Elijah, who was sent to what house? Was sent to the house of Israel to demonstrate to them who their God really was. It wasn't Baal. Elijah had a contest between the two to show them that their God was the God who brought them out of Egypt. God won. The priests of Baal were murdered. But the house of Israel kept on worshiping the false God. Finally, God had to obey his own law that said that the house of Israel would be taken into captivity and would be a nation or a kingdom no more. So at the time of Jesus' birth, we have this situation. We have Israel, which was split into the house of Judah and the house of Israel. The house of Judah is Judah, Benjamin, and Levi. And the house of Israel was Joseph, Reuben, Gad, Manasseh, Naphtali, Asher, Zebulun, Issachar, Simeon, and Dan. The house of Judah were the only Israelites who were not in a state of annulment from the covenant of God. The house of Israel were at a time far off, but by the blood of Jesus Christ are made near again. It was his death and resurrection that put them back in the covenant. They are reconciled with God and with the house of Judah. The whole house of Israel had married God at Mount Sinai. God was their king. After many years, Israel rejected this theocracy. They became a monarchy instead. Why did they become a monarchy? To be like the other nations. Eventually, the two houses separated. The house of Judah had a few good kings. The house of Israel, each succeeding king became worse than the previous one. They had no good kings at all. They became outright Baal worshipers until they were finally divorced by God. This is what the Apostle Paul is referring to in Ephesians 2. They, the house of Israel, were uncircumcised, alienated from the civic life of Israel, were strangers of the covenant of the promise. They had no hope in the society without their own God and were cut off from the Abrahamic covenant. This is where the Judeo-Christian has it mixed up and identifies the wrong people with the wrong circumstance. And they are about 700 years behind the times. They say that the Jews rejected Christ and as a result were put in a biblical parentheses, cut off from the covenant of God. But most of them fail to say that the Jews plotted and executed the murder of Jesus Christ. It was the house of Israel that was put out of the covenant that God made with Abraham. And there was nothing, absolutely nothing, that they could do to get back in. That's what it means when it says they had no hope. It happened around 700 B.C., the Jews were never in the covenant at all, at any time, except for Esau, who despised it and lost it forever when he married interracially with the Hittites and Canaanites. Only God can let the house of Israel back in the covenant, for it was only he that walked between the slain animals with Abram. Abram was in a deep sleep. God forgave his people and broke down the middle wall of partition that was between the two houses for centuries. It was the ordinances of the tabernacle temple and animal sacrifices that were put away. For Jesus Christ fulfilled the types. It was both houses that the blood applied. The animal sacrifices were now fulfilled. The house of Israel never worshiped at the temple at Jerusalem. Instead, they built two false temples. Judeo-Christianity is wrong. Is there a preacher in all of Judeo-Christianity that knows that the Jews are not synonymous with Israelites? Look at what Tex Mar says about these verses, which I just read to you, Ephesians chapter 2. It's taken from an article found on his website, so you can go read it. It's entitled, One Jesus, One Nation, One Seed, One People. Here's the quote from that article. Text says, Christians are new creations, believers in spirit and in truth. Jews and Gentiles alike can be and are Christians. God discerns the heart and not the outward fleshly appearance. Paul, himself a Jew, told Gentiles and Jews that Jesus had broken down the middle wall partition between Jew and Gentile and made of all one nation, which he called the Commonwealth of Israel. He goes on and says in this article, yes, we are all one. We are a united, holy nation. But throughout the centuries, Satan has attempted to continue a division and drive a wedge between Gentiles and Jews. Jesus prophesied in Matthew 23 and 24 that because of unbelief on their part, the physical nation called Israel was finished. He stated, behold, your house is left unto you desolate. He continues, the satanic Jews have been able over the past 120 years to convince a great number of Christians that the Bible is incorrect and that Jesus lied when he said, your house is left unto you desolate. I will finish up what Pastor Mars says with this last paragraph. These satanic Jews as a whole have continued to divide themselves from others. For some 2,000 years, they have tried to maintain the dead old covenant. To this day, the Jews continue their hatred and strife against Christians and against Jesus Christ. But then he says, a remnant of Jews, however, has believed and were saved, being grafted back into the olive tree of life, unquote. Text says that a remnant of Jews were saved while the nation of Israel was made desolate. He even says the Apostle Paul was a Jew. But wait a minute. The Apostle Paul was a believer of the Jews' religion in his younger years, which he later renounced, and they hated him for that. Paul was actually a Pharisee, which were mainly Jews at that time, but there were a few Israelites that were still a Pharisee. The Jews lived in Seir until they were defeated in war by the house of Judah. About 100 B.C., after the military defeat by the Israelites, the Edomite Jews were forced to either die or follow the Israelites' God, which was absolutely an impossibility for them to do so. After many years, the land of Judah was occupied by mainly Israelites of the tribe of Judah, Benjamin, and Levi, and Jews who were descended from the cursed Canaanites. The Jews took control of the land of Judah just as they have in America. The king was a Jew. Most of the Pharisees were Jews. Most, if not all, the money changers were Jews. The majority of Sadducees were Jews. The Sanhedrin were mostly Canaanite Jews. And many of the other government jobs were held by Jews. Since the Jews know that the tribe of Judah through David contains what? It contains the promise of the scepter. That's rulership. The Jews tell the lie that they are descended from this particular tribe only, the tribe of Judah. And this is the area where the majority of them lived, Jerusalem and the surrounding area, the same area where Judah dwelt. So it kind of makes some sense, although it is dead wrong. But Paul, like the 11 of the other 12 apostles, were from the tribe of Benjamin, not Judah. Most of Benjamites lived in Galilee, not in Judah. Notice what the New Testament tells us. Quote, I say then, hath God cast away his people? God forbid. For I also am an Israelite of the seed of Abraham, of the tribe of Benjamin. Unquote. Romans 11, verse 1. But the Jews themselves tell who they are descended from. The Jewish Encyclopedia says they are descended from Esau and his two Canaanite wives. Later in history, over 90% of the Jews are descended from Ashkenazi, a descendant of Japheth. And there were Jews who were descendants of Shelah, the son of Judah and a Canaanite wife, and other mongrel offspring of Canaanites with Israelites. There is no recorded history of any Canaanite or Jew ever being in the covenant between God and Abraham, for they are mongrels. God had warned Israel not to marry anyone from the Canaanite lineage. Esau was in that covenant, but he despised it. He sold it to his younger twin brother for a bowl of red soup. Afterwards, Esau said that he would kill his brother Jacob because of the covenant that Esau had despised. The text, Mars, totally ignores this information. he says that all Jews are Israelites. And that the Apostle Paul, who also says he was a Jew, said that both Jew and Gentile are made one after the middle wall partition had been torn down by Jesus. By saying Jews and Gentiles, text means all races of the earth. Jews means all of Israel, and Gentiles mean everyone else except Jews. This is a common mistake that sees practically all Judeo-Christians. There is nothing mentioned that the Jews are descended from the miscegenated offspring with Canaanite women, with Esau, Shelah, other Israelites, and the Ashkenazim. None at all. They are deceived when they are told that they are descended from either all the tribes of Israel or simply the tribe of Judah. And he doesn't mention that the Jews have their differences as well. There are Sephardic Jews, Ashkenazi Jews, Hasidic Jews, Reform Jews, Black Jews, and etc. that have different beliefs and fight amongst each other. Are all these Israelites? No, none of them are. Have you ever thought that most races outside of Israel didn't know anything about the animal sacrifices or temple laws that they were supposed to keep? So how could the commandments relating to these ordinances being abolished affect the two? But it would affect the house of Judah and the house of Israel, for the commandments applied to them both. The animal sacrifices put off the sins of the Israelites for 1 year. The animals had to be sacrificed each year. Only Israel were given these commandments. The other races were not. Why were the commandments of these ordinances abolished? Because Jesus Christ fulfilled them. Now tell me. Who did he put away the sins of? His people or the sins of all the races? The Jews were gathered in Jerusalem in 70 AD when the Romans came to fight against them. The true Israelites left in a very unusual situation. The Roman army pulled out of their attack on Jerusalem for no apparent reason and rested for a couple of days. This was a sign for the Israelites to escape, and they did. The Jews were left, about 1 million of them. They were divided into several factions. One faction, who wanted their kin to fight to the death, set fire to the food supply in the city. They soon began killing each other. When the battle was over, Jerusalem was in a shambles. The temple was destroyed, and about 1 million Jews died. Do you understand that the temple that once was God's house was destroyed? It hasn't been rebuilt in Jerusalem in almost 2,000 years. That is another reason the ordinances of the temple and animal sacrifices were abolished at the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Because they are not needed anymore. The house of Israel hadn't used the temple in its entire history. The temple had been completed during the reign of Solomon, the son of King David. Shortly after its dedication, about 13 years, the house of Israel seceded from the house of Judah and forbid its citizens from ever worshiping in the temple at Jerusalem, which was located in their enemies, the house of Judah's land. And what benefit were the animal sacrifices? For they had been supplanted by the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. There was no need for an inferior animal for the sacrifice of Israel's yearly sins after they had received eternal forgiveness for all their sins. Text omits any discussion about the house of Israel being the one that Ephesians 2 is talking about. along with their Israelite neighbor to the south, the house of Judah. He wrongly explains it as being Jews and Gentiles. To sum up, we can say that the word Jew is now a term used to refer to a group of people who today claim to be exclusive descendants of all of Israel. It is a shortened form of Judean, which is how Strong's Concordance uses the word. I give you the word in the Greek. Should be translated. Confuses arises because the group referred to as Jews today claims the terms Jews and Israel are synonymous, but they're not. But Judean refers to those of the land of Judea. Descendants of the southern kingdom of Judah are those from the tribe of Judah. Israel, the name God gave to the patriarch Jacob, refers either to the whole house of Israel or to the northern kingdom. And the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, cannot be referred to as Jews or Judeans because ancestors are not named by their descendants. Even at the destruction of Judea and the temple by the Romans in 70 AD, the Edomite Jews, called Idumeans, purposely wreaked havoc on the rest of Judean inhabitants who had not escaped out of Judea. Josephus records the history of what happened. Here's a quote from Wars of the Jews, Book 4, Chapter 5, Sections 1 and 2. Nor did the Idumeans, Edomite Jews, spare anybody, for they are naturally a barbarous and bloody nation. And now the outer temple was all of it overflowed with blood. And that day, as it came on, saw 8,500 dead bodies there. But the rage of the Idumeans was not saturated by these slaughters. But they now betook themselves to the city and plundered every house and slew everyone they met. Nice group of people. Throughout the centuries, beginning with Jacob, Esau, Edom hated Israel. And God hated Esau, but loved Jacob, Israel. But what happened to the Jewish people after the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD? What happened to them? They're here today, aren't they? The Jewish survivors were scattered throughout most of the world. The Khazarian Empire were located in the southern steppes of Russia. Other Jews had settled in this area before the people known in history as the Khazars occupied it. These Jews could have well planted the seeds of Judaism for later Khazarian conversion. Even after the Khazars occupied it, other Jews sought out refuge among the Khazarian people. These Jews were located in the Byzantine Empire and were under anti-Jewish policies that forced many Jews to flee to less dangerous lands such as Khazaria. This is taken from the book, The Jews of Khazaria, page 88, in the 8th and 9th centuries. These Jews were welcomed by the ruler of the Khazars. The Jews, for almost 2,000 years, from 70 A.D. to 1948, were a people without a country. They lived in many of the European countries, as well as Brazil, Mexico, United States, Jamaica, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, on and on and on and on. But you know, most European countries, from time to time, what'd they do? They kicked the Jews out of their country. Some did it three times. And there's a whole big list of them. And for example, I do not want you to forget that England expelled them from the year 1290 to 1660, a period of 370 years. In the United States, the first Jews, 23 of them, arrived in Amsterdam, which was the forerunner of New York City, in the year 1654. There still were no Jews in England. By 1816, Charleston, South Carolina had the largest Jewish population of any city in the United States. I say that because of what happened in Charleston a couple weeks ago. Between 1881 and 1924, over 2 million Jews would immigrate to the United States when the Jews began their communist uprising in Russia. And we know who instrumented that. The United States decided to get rid of their form of government by forming a new constitution. The constitution was ratified in 1789 and the first president was elected. Let's look at the years. In 1776 was what? The Declaration of Independence. In 1777, the Articles of Confederation were written. Most people don't even know about the Articles of Confederation. They were written. And that year, and the next year, France recognizes United States independence. 1781, the British surrender at Yorktown, Virginia. So we fought the war for quite a long time. 2 years later, the Treaty of Paris is signed. And then 4 years later, we have the Constitutional Convention. And then 2 years later, 1789, the United States Constitution in effect. Just hold a second. That's everybody's learned that in American history, right? Declaration of Independence, Articles of Confederation, Treaty of Paris, Constitutional Convention. What else happened in 1789? French Revolution begins. And in 1803, we bought the Louisiana Purchase, United States. It was sold to them by Napoleon. Why? He needed money to fight all the wars he was fighting. So he bargained deal. Was it $15 million? I forget what it was. 1799-1804, Napoleon seizes power in a coup d'etat. He crowned himself emperor with the crown from the Pope in 1804. 1804, the Civil Code enacted by Napoleon. I'm going to talk about the Civil Code. 1806, the Grand Sanhedrin reunited. And from 1796 to 1815, Napoleon fought wars against most of Europe, including Italy, Austria, the Netherlands, England, Egypt, Syria, Malta, Russia, and the present-day Israel. No wonder he had to sell the Louisiana Purchase. I'm going to talk about Napoleon. Why would I bring a message on Napoleon in a church? Because it affects very greatly where we're at today. The whole press is saying Black Lives Matter. We heard that sermon last week. You just take what that says. How did we get here? One of the many contributions that Napoleon has made to improve the quality of life of the people, and perhaps one of his most important and lasting ones, was his civil code. Anybody hear the civil code, Napoleon, in school? If I did, I went right over my head. He felt a personal responsibility for its realization. This at a time in history when discrimination was rampant. It was then that Napoleon decided to liberate and offer, liberty, equality, and fraternity to who? Jews, Protestants, and Freemasons. He also opened the churches that were closed for years. Well, that's the main saying of the Freemasons, liberty, equality. The Freemasons were the ones who started the revolution. The Civil Code of 1804 was to grant religious freedom to all of them. At that time, there were 480,000 Calvinists and 200,000 Lutherans and only 40,000 Jews living in France. In 1804, Napoleon arranged for the public regulation of the Protestant communities and then decided that the state would assume the responsibility for the salaries of their pastors. Napoleon was the first leader in Europe to grant liberty, equality, and fraternity to all religions. Napoleon is granting liberty to the Jews. The French Revolution began the same year that George Washington first took office as being president of the new nation under the Constitution. In France, Napoleon capitalized on the situation in order to dominate the new ruling consulate by creating a constitution which bound his interests to many of the powerful people in France, which were the landowners. He was then able to use this leverage to support into being declared emperor. Napoleon was the first leader in Europe to grant liberty, equality, and fraternity to all religions. I repeat that sentence. It is significant that this is the original Masonic slogan, liberty, equality, and fraternity, word for word. Many of the American revolutionary leaders of 1776 were Freemasons. And even more alarmingly, many of the principal political actors of the French Revolution were prominent French Freemasons. Napoleon was possibly one too. In 1789, the year of the outbreak of the French Revolution, Catholicism was the official religion of the French state. The French Catholic Church recognized the authority of the Pope as the head of the Roman Catholic Church, but had negotiated certain liberties that privileged the authority of the French monarch, giving it a distinct national identity characteristic by considerable autonomy. France's population of 28 million was almost entirely Catholic, with full membership of the state denied to Protestant and Jewish minorities. Napoleon was the only government leader that gave Jews equality when most of the other nations kept them in bondage or kicked them out. He also abolished a special tax on Jews in Germany and gave them for the very first time, civic and political equality. When strong opposition in France manifested itself, Napoleon stood firm in his support of Jewish equality. When Napoleon came to power, he did not liberate the Jews for political reasons, because there were not much more than 40,000 of all France, and they were living in various provinces. The province where Jews were most persecuted was Alsace, where half of the Jewish population of France was living. In Paris, there were approximately 1,000 Jews. They were excluded from doing business, excluded from government positions, and the purchase of property. Although there was tremendous opposition by the anti-Jewish segment of the population, many of them knew and believed the evilness of the Canaanite Jews. What evil do the Jews do? They were aware of their specialization in usury, magic, sorcery, fortune-telling, astrology, potions and drugs, poisons, alchemy, amulets, incantations and curses, aphrodisiacs and cosmetics. All these were against God's law. One of the leading Jewish citizens, Isaac Serf Burr, presented to Minister Politis a specific plan that would ensure Jewish integration into the population. The plan was brought to Napoleon at his camp in 1805. He approved it and instructed Portalis to implement it as quickly as possible. As far as the Jews are concerned, it can hardly be doubted that Napoleon's laws regulating the life of the French Jewish communities were a turning point in their development in modern free society. Get what he did next. 111 representatives of the Jewish community representing all the departments of France and northern Italy met at City Hall. Napoleon had requested answers to accusations made against the Jews so he could understand their position clearly. I wonder who is making accusations against the Jews. The reunion of so many Jews from the different parts of France represented the renewal of the famous Sanhedrin, which had ruled Israel before Jesus Christ's ministry. And there's a picture of the Grand Sanhedrin reunited. The Grand Sanhedrin was the supreme assembly of the Jewish nation, and it had not been reunited for 18 centuries, 1800 years. Napoleon brings it back. Napoleon had the idea of assembling the principal Jewish notables of all of Europe in order to permit them to solve the problems that concerned him. It convened by decree on the 23rd of August, 1806. The Grand Sanhedrin met from the 9th of February to the 9th of March, 1807. At the time of their last reunion, Napoleon was proclaimed the modern Cyrus. Bible. Napoleon was warmly and unanimously praised. Boy, if the Jew praises you, I would be nervous. I'm doing something wrong. The Sanhedrin continued to be an important force in Israel until 70 AD when the Roman general Titus destroyed Jerusalem. The Sanhedrin replaced the monarchy in Israel in those days, and it was their authority. Here's a quote from Napoleon. Quote, "This is not the way to solve the Jewish question. I will never accept any proposals that will obligate the Jewish people to leave France." Well, a lot of countries in Europe had kicked him out. "Because to me, the Jews are the same as any other citizen in our country. It takes weakness to chase them out of the country, but it takes strength to assimilate them." Unquote. The decree last issued on the 30th of May, 1806, requested that a special assembly of Jewish leaders and rabbis of all the French departments would meet in Paris to discuss all outstanding matters, including answering questions dealing with accusations against the Jews made by faithful anti-Jewish churches. It was on the 23rd of July, 1806, when all these representatives met at Paris, at which time Napoleon stated, so here they're meeting, it's great, the great Sanhedrin. Quote, "My desire is to make Jews equal citizens in France, have a conciliation between their religion and their responsibilities in becoming French, and to answer all the accusations made against them." I've got some accusations against him I'd like to hear of answer. "I want all people living in France to be equal citizens and benefit from my laws." This is equality. All equal. This is where it came from. "The liberator of Italy abolished the laws of the Inquisition, and the Jews felt free at last." Here's something you may not have known. I didn't. When the French troops were in Palestine and besieging the city of Acre, Napoleon had already prepared a proclamation making Palestine an independent Jewish state. Did you know that? I didn't. He felt confident that he could occupy Acre, and the following days he would enter Jerusalem, and from Jerusalem he would issue his proclamation. He was unable to realize this project because of the intervention of the British. The proclamation was printed and dated the 20th of April, 1799, but his unsuccessful attempt to capture Acre prevented it from being issued. The Jews had to wait more than 150 years before their state was proclaimed. The proclamation, however, did bear fruit. It was the precursor to Zionism. Heightening awareness of the cause of Jewish statehood. The ideas Napoleon expressed found the admiration of many who saw Napoleon's gestures as a fulfillment of biblical prophecy, which foretells of the restoration of the Jews to their land. The idea drew many adherents, especially in England. 118 years later, the British would issue the Balfour Declaration, which called for a Jewish homeland, and ultimately 31 years later, in the year 1948, Israel would be recognized as a sovereign state by popular vote in the United Nations General Assembly. I was 6 years old when that happened. Perhaps it can be said that Napoleon's premature announcement on the first day of Passover in 1799 played an important role in the creation of the State of Israel. On the 16th of August, 1800, Napoleon declared, quote, "If I govern a nation of Jews," if he governed a nation of Jews, "I should reestablish the Temple of Solomon." What are they planning to do now? On the 10th of November, 1816, Dr. Omeria, who was Napoleon's personal physician at the time, asked the emperor point blank as to why he was encouraging and supporting the Jews. You want to see his answer? Here's what he said, quote, "My primary desire was to liberate the Jews and make them full citizens. I want to confer upon them all the legal rights of equality, liberty, and fraternity." There's the three things, Freemasonry, "as was enjoyed by the Catholics and Protestants. It is my wish that the Jews be treated like brothers, as if we were all part of Judaism." That sounds like the beginning of Judeo-Christianity. "As an added benefit, I thought that this would bring to France many riches, because the Jews are numerous, and they would come in large numbers to our country, where they would enjoy more privileges than in any other nation. Without the events of 1814, most of the Jews of Europe would have come to France, where equality, fraternity, and liberty awaited them, and where they can serve the country like everyone else." Unquote. During the different periods of Napoleon's career, his sympathy for the Jews was clearly noted. He did everything he could to assure the Jews were treated on an equal basis as Catholics and Protestants. The French Revolution in 1789 was to change all the various restrictions the Jews had to face in France. On September 27, 1791, that France adopted a decree which accorded the Jews of France full citizenship. However, the Legislative Assembly did not take any specific measures to apply this new freedom that was granted to the Jews. The National Convention closed the synagogues, forbid the use of the Hebrew language, and in general made their lives difficult. Under the Directory, the synagogues were opened again, and the Jews got involved in business and political life. But in general, the Jews were barely tolerated. Before Napoleon took over the leadership of the French government, the political situation of the Jews was precarious, unstable, and had to submit to negative laws, and according to specific reasons of France, they were sometimes treated in a liberal manner and sometimes in a tyrannical manner. Napoleon's religious opinions were the height of modern philosophy. He was completely given to what word? Tolerance. Everywhere that Napoleon went, He led tolerance by the hand. Everywhere that he found several religions, he ended the domination by which one took precedence over the others. Faith, Napoleon would say, is beyond the reach of the law. It is the most personal possession of man, and no one has the right to demand an account for it, unquote. He wanted the Jews to have the Jerusalem in France. Now my conclusion. Illuminati Jews have waged a covert war against man and God for several millennia. They were hindered up till the time of Napoleon. As Judaism is regarded as a satanic cult, and Jews were considered as being agents of the devil. Christians believe that Jews both hated them and conspired to destroy Christendom. They believed the long-awaited Jewish Messiah was in fact the Antichrist. It's quite a difference. The conspiracy is the real history of the world. The real cause of war and depression. Society has been subverted and lies constantly. The Kabbalistic conspiracy is on the cusp of success. God has been banished from public life. You see him in the public schools? See him in our court system? He's even banished from churches. Illuminati Jews control the mass media and can deceive and degrade the masses. We see that from what's taking place the last couple of weeks. Entertainment is an orgy of pornography, obscenity, propaganda, violence, and Satanism. Illuminati Jews and Masons behind feminism are responsible for the debauchery of the Western women. They are behind the promotion of homosexuality and same-sex marriages designed to destroy both marriage and family. They were at the forefront of sexual liberation, pornography, and abortion. The mass media is obsessed with sex. It has a fawning fetish for fertile females, and even children aren't safe. The stock market is a giant casino with millions day trading. Christianity has been Judaized. Well, Judeo-Christianity. Concerned with social change, which is really the Satanist agenda, rather than spiritual development and salvation. Christian Zionists and politicians are pledged to the Zionist rogue state. You keep seeing change, change, Obama, change. The Illuminati are destabilizing the third world and the charities to empower females to reject marriage. Donors are invited to become an agent of change, which is code for the New World Order. See a young person. Are you married? No, I live with this guy. They don't get married. They just live with people. The girls want to be educated, that is, indoctrinated, as in the West. In general, they are feminizing the world, making women and their concerns central. The people are lost and increasingly desperate. I'm going to end with a couple of scriptures. Nehemiah chapter 9, verse 2, it says, all Israel separated themselves from all strangers and stood and confessed their sins and the iniquity of their fathers. Well, who were the strangers that Israel separated themselves from? In English, we just have the word stranger. The answer is found in Nehemiah 13:3, where it confirms this separation was from alien strangers. Quote, now it came to pass when they had heard the law that they separated from Israel all the mixed multitude. Unquote. The mixed multitude. The mongrel seed were always a snare to Israel, and they still are. This message will be continued, part 5. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel.